Okay, so the title of my talk is The First Time in the Morning After. So I'm going to begin. First impression, first kiss, first love, first crush, first steps, first words, first job, first period, first failure, first apartment, first graduation, first communion, first ticket, first reading, first child, first time, first, first, first. These are all firstly important times. Though this paper will seemingly go to great pains to avoid psychoanalysis, indeed it is best understood as being repressed, it is interesting to note initially that the word first is used in Strachey's standard edition translation of Freud's work some 3,766 times. Pleasure, by way of comparison, is used 1,088. Evelyn Jago, in her hitherto unpublished paper, Technologies of Extended Perception, Psychoanalysis in the Long Novel as Expanded Forms, writes, firstly, dans premier temps, a fact about how we read. For the most part, as academics, we read in private. The first time, it remains hidden so that we can come across as knowing something about the text. This only happens once. The first time is an important time. It's more prone to mistakes, but also to flashes. We retain our surprise, and no one can imagine what we will think, not even the author, who cannot know what it is like to read his book for the first time, because he's never had that kind of ignorance about it. Jago's negotiation of the first time as a theoretical trope or concept is an important one, and one that remains necessary to consider because the first time indeed passes by so quickly that one hardly ever really considers it or even notices how quickly it passes by. It can, of course, be noted that during first times, we rush. We feel a sense of urgency to complete the first time. However, the point that I want to consider here today is the ways in which the first time has always already been mythologized for us, as it has always been given meaning. That is, as Roland Barthes might have it, myth is not defined by the object of its message, but by the way in which it utters its message, end quote. Meaning is given to the object through the ways in which we speak, enunciate, and narrate the event being mythologized. The first time, thus, is supposed to be an important time, and it is a time that we will remember regardless of the success or failure of the first time. Roland Barthes again, but this time in his seminar, The Preparation of the Novel, writes, the novel fantasy starts out from a few novels and to that extent rests on, rather takes as its starting point, something like the first pleasure of reading. And from our knowledge of erotic pleasure, we recognize the force of the first pleasure which traverses a lifetime, end quote. Barthes is talking as much about reading and writing as he is about the sexual life cycle of the human. The first pleasure, according to Barthes, is something that will be a moment, perhaps the moment, which will be recalled throughout the entire lifetime of the subject. Thus it follows that one does not, indeed perhaps cannot, forget his or her first time, and that memory will reside within the self, haunt the self, and trouble the self. In this paper, I want to begin to consider the question of the first time, however we define it, and how we might theorize and talk about these instances. It seems to me that in light of Jago and Barthes' writing, that we need to be thinking about the first time. These are the moments in which I, as a subject, come to some thing, some action, and some experience with a limited understanding insofar as I have yet to experience this specific moment, its pleasure, and its time. This does not suggest that I do not come with a certain, as Paul Ricoeur might call it, cultural baggage. That is, I know about the first times in terms of the way it's been narrated or mythologized. Ricoeur writes, quote, the simple mentioning of an action brings into play the pre-understanding common to the poet and his or her reading public of what action, or rather acting, signifies. It is this familiarity, this prior acquaintance with the order of action that, by way of mediation of fiction, will be intensified, magnified, and in the strong sense of the word, transfigured, end quote. Ricoeur's notion here, though about fiction, like the thoughts of Barthes on the novel, fantasy, and Jago on reading, work very well, I should imagine, with life itself. That is, in the experience of the first time, there exists something of a pre-understanding of the first time through the ways in which we have heard about it. But because it has not yet been experienced, it cannot be known in any real or tangible sense. That is, I, as the living subject, am not yet afforded what Wolfgang Ieser calls advanced retrospection, which is to say, quote, during the process of reading, there is an active interweaving of anticipation and retrospection, which on a second reading may turn into a kind of advanced retrospection. As such, there is a fundamental difference between the first time and the second time, whether it be reading, writing, or any number of experiences. I'm speaking here about a moment in which I, as the subject, am a virgin, so to speak, before the act about to take place, whether it be reading, writing, or the carnal act. This time, this virginal time, this first time, is an important time. And of course, as Jago would have it, it's more prone to mistakes, but also to flashes. Jago, unlike Barth, seems more anxious before the first time, at least in terms of the way she speaks about reading the long novel in relation to living the long process of analysis. She recognizes the myth of the first time, but has also noted that it's more prone to mistakes. In many regards, the seeming recognition of its importance and yet its likely failure, or its mistakes, bring about a sensation of too much. This is another theoretical trope that she is considering. Instead of there being too much to understand in this moment, I want to suggest that part of the reason the first time contains anxiety is simply because we prepare for it, which helps to reinforce its importance and yet at the same time undercuts our experience of the first time doing whatever we are doing for the first time. Even when we approach a literary work for the first time, I would contend, there is a necessary anxiety that resides within the reader. For instance, let us take a rather random example of a reader about to read Marcel Proust's In Search of Lost Time. The reader prepares a plan of some sort of how he or she will manage to read these 1.5 million words, these 4,300 pages. Or, if it is in the context of a classroom, as was the case with my first time with Proust, we prepare by reading scholarly, critical, biographical, and theoretical writings, which are read either in advance or alongside Proust's masterpiece. Then, of course, there is the matter of the fact that Proust's work is a, quote-unquote, masterpiece, and thus I must attend to it and read it with a certain amount of respect and admiration, even if in the end I find it tedious and long. I imagine in many ways that the same anxiety and this process of preparation can be said of analysis. The first time one prepares for analysis, there's a great deal of thought, energy, and consideration put into it. We prepare for the first time because of the meanings attached to it, and in this preparation we feel an anxiety and a sense of too much, of being overwhelmed by the forthcoming first time. Adam Phillips, in Five Short Talks on Excess, notes that, quote, after all, inspiration, falling in love, conversion experiences, a sense of injustice, the most radical transformations that can occur in life are traditionally overwhelming, excessive experiences, end quote. Phillips is right, but what happens when these excesses happen for the first time? Each of these experiences, inspiration, falling in love, conversion, and injustice, have all been adequately, if not excessively, mythologized for us, put into stories. We prepare ourselves consciously or unconsciously for each of these scenarios. But at what point does something or someone become excessive? Or rather, at what point do I, as the living subject, realize that I have prepared too much for the first time? Phillips through William Blake notes that, quote, you never know what is enough unless you know what is more than enough, end quote. And the only way that I can ever truly know that one has had more than enough is through the lived experience, which means through retrospection. Yet even though this point seems obvious enough, it does not invalidate this myth, as I'm calling it, of the first time, nor does it somehow make us prepare just enough, or perhaps even less, for whatever experience, sensation, feeling that we have yet to experience, sense, or feel. Excess, anxiety, preparation, and the first time, I want to argue, come together when one begins to read Roland Barthes' Morning Diary, in which he accounts for his reactions, feelings, and sentiments towards a first time that, like all first times, can only be lived and experienced once, the death of his mother. Throughout his diary, Barthes often speaks of first times in relation to mourning. There is something of an interesting paradox, at least at first glance. Death is a last event, and yet the subject who lives with death experiences it for the first time. How does one prepare for the death of the self and the death of the other? While death is the metaphor at play here, every first time is necessarily both a birth and a death. In a sense, it is the birth of the post-first-time identity, and it is a death in the sense that one is no longer inexperienced, lacking in knowledge of that time, and that all other times are just that, other times. We are never truly prepared for the first times precisely because they are so unpredictable, unexpected, and, as Evelyn Jago would have it, prone to mistakes. All first times require preparation, and it is, I want to argue, because of this preparation that we mourn. We must mourn, we will mourn, the first time. The very first words of Bart's morning diary demand recognition and consideration of both the first time and morning time. He writes, first wedding night, but first morning night. Indeed, the idea of the first time and morning appears well over a dozen times in these short entries, which often run no more than a sentence or two. What we must ask now is what is lost that must be mourned? In the case of Bart's diary, the author is mourning the loss of his mother, and yet as I read the diary, I could not help but see and imagine the ways in which a variety of ideas and discourses surrounding a question of the first time and our need to mourn are brought together. More specifically, I'm arguing that only through the first time can we begin to mourn. In his diary, Bart writes, when Mama was living, in other words, my whole past life, I was neurotically in fear of losing her. End quote. He can only imagine her loss as anyone can only imagine their first time. In other words, even though he likely does not wish nor does he desire her death, he spends a lifetime, however consciously or unconsciously, preparing for her death. But it is only through that actual loss that Bart is finally able to begin to fully mourn the loss of that first time, despite so much preparation. So let us return to those first words of the diary, first wedding night, but first morning night. The first words refer to, in many ways, the first pleasure that Bart alluded to in his seminar. Let us now to focus on this first time, let us now turn our attention, so to speak, to this first time. Indeed, this first time is so powerful that we often ascribe a definite article to the first time. So for the past year or two, I've spent a great deal of time thinking about the first time, more specifically, that virginal first time, but it has been within the context of romance novels. And those first times are always magical, always perfect, always ideal, and often have many climaxes. The virgin is given his happy ending, so to speak. However, as is known, the first time is, as Evelyn Jago writes, prone to mistakes. Precisely because it is a first time, and as I have been suggesting, the ways in which we have thought about and imagined the first time. Jane Austen once quipped, quote, why not seize the pleasure at once? How often is happiness destroyed by preparation? Foolish preparation, end quote. And in many regards, this is precisely the challenge to be attended to here. To consider the first time, I want to ever so briefly reflect upon Ian McEwan's On Chesil Beach, in which the characters are not afforded a first pleasure with their first time, rather quite the contrary. It is for this reason that I think it becomes imperative that we begin to think critically and theoretically about the first time and the morning after. The novella spans just over 160 pages, and the bulk of the novel, indeed the first 106 pages, accounts for the ways in which the protagonists have prepared for their first time. Readers are told that, quote, between Edward and Florence, nothing happened quickly, end quote. And in a certain regard, the narrative and the reader must reside in what Eve Kosofsky Sedgwick calls, quote, the freshness of slow learners, end quote. The two have prepared for this first time, and we are reminded that this occasion will, as Bott suggests, traverse a lifetime. Ultimately, the first time is a pathetic and miserable failure that does not live up to any of the expectations of these overprepared virgins. Readers are told that, quote, in a frenzy of anger and shame, she sprang from the bed, and then she ran toward the beach, and even when she reached the beach at last, she did not stop running. The failure of this scene is important because it allows for the first morning night, and also recalls Jago's point about the first time being more prone to mistakes, but also to flashes. The question becomes, what, if anything, went wrong? Was this really a failure, or The failure of this scene is important because it allows for the first morning night and also recalls this more prone to mistakes, but also to flashes. So what, if anything, went wrong? What are we to do with this? Was this really a failure, or was this really just what Bart, and more specifically Jago, call the first time? Following this scene, the two are divorced, and readers are left with Edward's character. Her character disappears. Quote, he was feeling the pull of contrary emotions and needed to hold on to all of his best, his kindest thoughts of her, or else he would fold. He would simply give up, end quote. And we are reminded throughout the rest of the narrative of the, quote, ruins of the wedding night, end quote. The first time was not a failure, but rather it was because there is so much value attached to the first time that we are all susceptible to what we might call excessive preparation for this first time. There is, as I have suggested, an excess that overwhelms, excess again, the narrative. In a very human moment in this text, a moment that does not seem terribly out of the ordinary, the first time does not become the first pleasure, but quite literally the first displeasure. Edward is left to mourn his first time. As Barthes would have it, first wedding night, first mourning night. The answer to Barthes' question is that there must be mourning. But what does one mourn? I do not believe that what needs to be mourned here so much is the failure, but rather what is being mourned is the first time and its loss. The time can never be taken back, never reclaimed. It has now escaped time. In the end, what we mourn in the first time is that excess, that preparation for the first time, precisely because everything we had imagined it would be, it was not. Phillips again writes, "Perhaps the road of excess, through the very disillusionments it produces, is a source of wisdom. That it is not the alcoholic, but the recovering alcoholic who has something to tell us. Perhaps as part of our growing up, we need to be excessive, to try to break all the rules, just to find out what, if anything, these rules are made of and why they matter. Perhaps only the road of excess can teach us when enough is enough. In excess and recognizing excess, we begin, I think, the work of mourning. So much energy is spent, indeed perhaps wasted, on cultivating our ideas of the first time, whatever that first time is, that we are in the end being nothing more than excessive. This excess is, of course, necessary, but the excess of the first time can and often does lead to a sense of despair in that all that preparation did not, in the end, prepare us. It is in this regard that we are overprepared only to realize that one can never truly prepare oneself for the first time. Rather, it must, however unfortunate, be lived in all of its excessiveness, its too muchness. Jago writes, "The first time it remains hidden so that we can come across as knowing something." And Adam Phillips, in a similar, though different vein, writes, We talk about the fear of teenage pregnancy, but not of the intense excitements of discovering sex and being able to experiment with it. Nor do we talk much about the fear and confusion and grief that sexuality brings in its wake because it is so pleasurable, or not pleasurable enough, because it is such an essential part of who we happen to be. The revelation of the first time is in some ways a trauma, which is, as Phillips writes, when the past is too present, when unbeknownst to oneself, the past obliterates the present. And it is this that must be mourned. Barthes writes, "There is then in mourning, in this kind of mourning, which is mine, a radical and new domestication of death. For previously it was only borrowed knowledge, clumsy, had from others, from philosophy, etc. But now it is my knowledge. It can hardly do me any more harm than my mourning." There is something that's very productive in the first time when conceived of as a time to mourn, precisely because it allows for one to come to terms with acquiring knowledge, the moment in which the borrowed, objectified knowledge becomes wholly consumed by and embodied to the living subject. And indeed, Carol Maver, in her most recent lecture at the University of Toronto, argues that to know enables mourning. In mourning, I think what we are mourning is as much the first time as it is the realization that everything that preceded the first time, in a very Proustian sense, is now lost time. Thank you.